Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
And welcome back to Stomp This Way. This week we are covering Godzilla, yeah. Singular Point.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we're a couple years late on this one, but hey, we're getting to it. We're catching up. We're catching up. Yeah. We're playing catch up, and one project at a time. But yeah, Godzilla Singular Point. So this was an anime that came out in summer of 2021. I think we were still podcasting.
Yes.
At the time it premiered, and I think we were slowly working deal. Me and Andrew had streamed it through dubious means prior to its release on Netflix in the United States. But it had released on Netflix. We were working Dylan through it, I think, slowly through the dub on Netflix whenever I could drag him to it. But we kind of gave up on the podcast before we could get an episode out on it. So now, here we are, talking about Godzilla Singular Point. Excited, Andrew?
Oh, you know it.
Very excited?
Yeah.
All right. Well, some quick production trivia. So this was co-produced by anime studios Bones and Orange. I think one handled the 2D animation and one handled the 3D animation. And distributed by Netflix. Character design was handled by Blue Exorcist creator Kanoue Kato, and monster design was handled by former Studio Ghibli animator Eiji Yamamori. It aired on Japanese television from April 1st to June 24th of 2021, Ooh. Released on Netflix in Japan on March 25th of 2021, and globally on Netflix on June 24th of 2021. It is comprised of 13 20 to 25 minute episodes. It won the Visual Effects Japan Awards 2022 in the Excellent and Best Awards in the Television Distribution Program Anime CG category. Very specific.
Very specific.
Nominated for the 42nd Nihon SF Teisho Award, which is some kind of award given to like science fiction projects in Japan.
Did have a lot of science.
There's a lot of science fiction. I don't know how much of it science and how much of it was fiction, but and it was also nominated for won the 53rd Seiun Award for in the best media category, which is another thing they give to like science fiction works in Japan, I guess. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's award-winning, Anger.
Award-winning. Scientific award-winning.
Scientific award-winning. But so let me read off the cast and crew real quick. We'll watch a trailer and then we'll come back. So cast and crew, it is directed by Atsushi Takahashi, written by To Injoe, music by Kan Sawada, and starring. So I'm going to do the character and then I'm going to do, since we watched it dubbed, I'm going to do the Japanese voice actor and then the English voice actor. Did I do this in the wrong order? Do we usually do trailer before cast and crew?
I'm not sure.
I think so. Anyway, well, we'll mix up the order this time. So, Mei Kamino, voiced by Yume Miyamoto and by Erica Harlacher. Yun Arikawa, voiced by Shoya Ishige and Johnny Young Bosch. Haburu Kato, voiced by Taro Kuichi and Stephen Fu. Guro Otaki, voiced by Wataru Takage and Keith Silverstein. Satomi Kanahara, voiced by Ayako Takeuchi and Brittany Cox. Pelops II, voiced by Misaki Kuno and Cassandra Lee Morris. and Jung / Jed Jaguar are both voiced by Rei Kugimiya and Kira Buckland. There's a lot more characters than that, but I get the voice pretty short. But anyway, now we're going to listen to the trailer. We'll come back and I'll read off my plot summary. And
it's kind of hard to.
Listen this into a plot summary was kind of, whatever, you know. But then we'll come back and we will get right into Godzilla Singular Point.
世界の平和を守るぞ。うちはただの町工場だろ。音楽データの解析結果が出ました。この中に何が隠れてる？マーキタイプ？Bハ博士が研究している変な分子の総称です。不可能を可能にする魔法のランプ。アンギラスは未来を予測してるんじゃなくて直接未来を見てるとしたら、破局？この宇宙全体がなかったことになるっていうか、地下の一種を持った骨。
悪夢を広げていく素材か。おそらくあれが破局へと向かう引き金。破局が始まる。芦原の予言通りというのか。破局
自体を何とかしないと。変えることのできない未来をあらかじめ知れたからって何かいいことあんのか。未来が見える意味。
All right, we're back. So as I said, this show is very hard to condense down to a plot summary when you don't understand 75% of what happened. So I went very high level and I might have still got some details wrong, but basically this is what happens in the show. When a catastrophe threatens to destroy the world, grad student Mei Kamino and factory employee Yun Arikawa must combine their brain power to prevent it. When a kaiju named Rodan appears in Japan, it is quickly followed by a poisonous red dust that begins spreading around the globe. Along with the red dust comes numerous kaiju, including the evolving aquatic monster, Godzilla. As Yun, Mei, and Ko scramble to find a way to save the planet, as past and present collide, Godzilla comes on land and begins wreaking havoc in Tokyo. Eventually, Yun and Mei, with the assistance of Yun's AI, Pelops II, and Jet Jaguar, are able to destroy Godzilla and crystallize the red dust, preventing the apocalypse. However, in an end-credit stinger, one dubious organization seems to be using the bones of an old Godzilla to construct a Mecha Godzilla, as the screen cuts to black. I think that's a pretty fair plot summary.
That's not too bad.
But yeah, so, you know, when this anime was announced, of course, it was on the heels of the anime trilogy, which, again, I think I said this last week or the week before last, not that great in our opinion here at the podcast. You can go back and listen to our reviews on those. So I was kind of skeptical, but when I heard that it was going to be sort of, we'll talk about that later in animation segment, but mostly a 2D hand-drawn animation ordeal, I was much more excited because I was kind of craving that kind of Godzilla anime and not this 3D CG stuff that we've been inundated with here recently. But so I was cautiously optimistic when it was getting ready to come out. How about you, Andrew? Were you excited to have another Godzilla anime?
Oh, I was excited. I was ready to see how this one was going to turn out, see how, if it was going to follow in the footsteps of the Netflix anime trilogy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm glad to say it was slightly better.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk about that. But, you know, I mean, of course, we're both fans of anime. Andrew, I mean, watches a lot of anime. So we want Godzilla to do well in the anime medium. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so this show, it starts with a great metaphor for the whole show, and then it's a bunch of overlapping voices that you can't understand.
Spouting a lot of scientific
mumbo jumbo and a lot of data dumping and overlapping math. Dialogue just spewing all out at you, which is basically basically the whole show.
Yes.
But no, I mean, so, you know, it gets started and we're introduced to, I'll call them the two leads of the show, which the characters are Mei Kamino, who is a grad student doing some kind of studies in Japan. And then you have Yun Arikawa. He works for this place called the Otaki Factory. What is the Otaki Factory, you may ask? Well, I don't really know after watching this show. They do your typical kind of contractor work, it seems like. Yes. It also seems like they're ghost hunters at the beginning of the show. they build robots, lay electrical wire. I mean, what don't fight monsters by the end of this? I mean, I guess
what don't they do?
And both of these characters, both Mei and Yun, are presented as geniuses.
Yes.
And, you know, they kind of both, they actually never meet face-to-face until the very end of the show. Mei will have some interaction with one of the other employees of the Otaki Factory, Habaru, who is Yun's best friend as far as I can tell, but he's also a former classmate of Mei when they were in high school, I think is what I heard.
Yes.
But actually, Mei and Yun, our two leads, will not meet until the very end of the show, and they never actually speak to each other face-to-face.
They kind of smile at each other.
There's a lot of texting between one another throughout the show. But, yeah, so that's the basic setup of the characters. And then the basic, you know, the show, I mean, the plot is, I'll just say it up front, to me, it's nonsensical. I mean, my plot summary there is about as deep as I can get into it because I don't, there's a lot of science mumbo jumbo, probably pseudoscience I was a guessing man. A lot of stuff about, and it gets crazier as the show goes on, a lot of stuff about the seeing into the future and stuff getting sent back into the past and artificial elements and
things that happened in the past already happened in the future.
And catastrophic events that they're trying to prevent, and blah, 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 orthogonal diagonalizers and whatever they call artificial elements. And the, I mean, there's a lot of just whatever, I don't know. But but basically, Rodan shows up in episode at the very end of episode one.
Yes.
And that's when things start. I mean, first of all, the characters are sent out. Yun and Habaru go and investigate this signal coming from this old mansion. And Mei, just so happens at the same time, is called in to this building. The radio station. I don't really know what it is. That they're trying to figure out where this strange signal is coming from and why it's being emitted from their station or whatever. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to try to explain this plot to you. Basically, there's some old bones of Godzilla in the basement of this building. It's, I think, emitting...
It's emitting the signal.
The signal that is going to draw Rodan. And we'll have, you know, first two or three episodes are, as far as kaiju go, pretty Rodan-centric. There's a lot of Rodan. And along with him, the herds, the flocks of Rodan come red dust. And the red dust, I guess it's not safe to breathe. But brings with it the kaiju, and then Manda quickly follow, a whole school of Manda. And then following the Manda, we get their Godzilla... I think the Godzilla in this show takes a lot of inspiration from Shin Godzilla in that he evolves. So his first form is like this aquatic kind of Titanosaurus-like
form,
aquatic form. And then he'll evolve into a second form, and then finally he'll get to Godzilla Ultima. I don't think we actually see Godzilla. I mean, Godzilla, the aquatic form, shows up at the very end of episode 2? Or 3?
3.
But we don't really see much of him. And then in episode 7 or 8, I think he comes on land. And I think it's episode like 10 or 11 that we finally see Godzilla Ultima. Which is the most traditional, his final form and his most traditional looking form.
Yes.
But yeah, there's just, like I said, there's a lot of the characters running around. There's a bunch of characters in this show. Most of them end up very, very tangential to the plot. some of them, there's at least two of them, I think, that I got confused because I thought that the guy that, like, the young guy working at the radio station or whatever at the beginning that the old guy shows the Godzilla bones to,
yeah,
was the same guy that was with them, like, as they were Asian, as they were going into Tokyo at the end. But apparently those were two different people, but they look a lot alike. I don't know. But
it gets kind of confusing.
There's a whole bunch of characters. A lot of them, like I say, really don't matter to the plot at the end of the show. And my big criticism of this show is that, really, I have two big criticisms. One, the plot's nonsensical. All the science stuff and the future and all the weird techno names and what's really going on goes way over my head. I don't understand.
Probably because we're not smart enough.
A bit of it. Yeah. So I've heard people say, funny marks, like, oh, you need an advanced science degree to even get it. I'm going to go out on a limb as someone who does not have an advanced science degree and say that this is a bunch of pseudoscience BS anyway, probably. And even if you had a science degree, just how jumbled it is. And I mean, this plot is impossible to follow. There's just no way. I don't care who you are. Unless you're the person that actually wrote it. I don't even sure the writers could follow their own plot here. It's totally nonsensical. And then the characters are very surface level characters. There's no real attempt at deep characterization in the show. I don't ever care about any of the characters. I mean, the old guy, the old guy that runs the factory, he's fun on like your typical like old crazy anime guy, grandpa level. Yeah. He's fun on that level, but there's no like real deep character work here.
Then there's like
hardly at all.
Third member of the Otaki Factory.
And yeah, speaking of characters, I mean, like, the third member of the Otaki Factory, she's like this goth girl.
Yeah.
That shows up every once in a while, but she matters zero to the plot.
Another one.
There's about, I don't know, what, three or four different three or four different agencies with different goals that come in and out of the plot, and I can't keep track of who's doing what.
The main one is the Shiva people.
Yeah, that they're in India, I think.
Yeah, they're the India.
There's a lot of globetrotting in this show. Mm-hmm. I guess one thing I should mention about the plot that I've been putting the plot summary, there's a lot of talk about this scientist from like 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name?
50
or 60 years. What was his name? Otashi or Ofashu.
Otashi
I don't know. Anyway, old guy scientist. He is the one like, he discovered a singular point.
Mm-hmm.
What is a singular point, Andrew? Explain it to us.
It's a point.
Yes.
Where the future and the past meet.
I don't know. And he built computers to see into the future, and he saw the end of the world. And
what
so
are they called, archetypes? What was that?
I think the archetypes were the artificial elements that they used to make the orthogonal diagonalizer, which is like this oxygen destroyer looking thing
that crystallizes the red dust.
But this old, what was that guy's name? Oh my gosh. The scientist's name is Ashihara. Ashihara built these computers. He looked into the future, saw the end of the world or something. And so he was trying to like figure it out in a way to prevent it, allegedly, but went missing. There was an explosion.
There was an explosion in the
And he went missing. They figured he was dead or something. Wait till the end. but, yeah, so, like I said, plot, I don't know. But basically, Godzilla comes ashore, starts, like, spewing a whole bunch of red dust in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Yoon and Mei and all their friends and enemies and whoever else go running around. trying to figure it out. There is a fun character, Pelops, the AI created by Yoon, I think is one of the more fun characters. It takes, well, there's several different versions of it. It follows Yoon around in his phone, and then there's a version of it gets downloaded onto May's phone, and then a version of it that gets uploaded to Jet Jaguar. Mm-hmm. Jet Jaguar is a robot in this show built by the Otaku Factory.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know, fast forward to the end, and they have this orthogonal diagonalizer that can crystallize the red dust. They use it a few times in other situations, but they need, like, to unlock a code that will permanently crystallize the red dust and defeat Godzilla. But they have to set it off on Godzilla's head or something. But it turns out that Jet Jaguar was the code the whole time, because Jet Jaguar, like, shuts down and, like, rewrites his programming. And it's actually a program from the future, and it turns giant and fights Godzilla too. But and then when Godzilla, like, blasted away with its heat beam, the orthogonal diagonalizer goes off and crystallizes all the red dust.
And it was blue crystals instead of red.
Yeah, whatever that meant. But if you stick around to the end credit, like I said, the bones that were in the basement of that building at the beginning got hauled off by one of the organizations.
Yeah.
And now they're building a Mecha Godzilla on top of it. And it looks like, what did I say his name was? Ashihara is still alive? It doesn't look like he's aged. Maybe he went into some kind of time capsule. I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever get a sequel. That was, 2.5 years ago that the show came out. I think it got mixed reception upon release. They've probably moved on from that now.
Yeah.
But anyway. But yeah, so, like I said, my issue with the show, all the data dumping, there's long sequences of just May and Yoon texting back and forth to each other. I did think, because the first time we watched it subtitled.
Yes.
Do you think you got more of it watching it dubbed?
Totally.
I don't know if I understood it better. I did get more of the dialogue watching it dubbed, because I wasn't have to read at the speed of light.
And the text, at least, they were dubbed.
And they were reading out the phone text they were sending out to each other, which helped. There's a lot of that. It's a lot of characters sitting around and, like I said, spewing scientific mumbo-jumbo. Not a lot of character work, like I said. Now, things I will give the show. One, it's 13 episodes and, you know, nice bite-sized anime, 20 to 25-minute bits. So that helps. You know, there's a ton. You can tell that at least some of the people that were working on this were big Godzilla fans. There's a lot of deep-cut Easter eggs here.
Yes.
I mean, like, there's, like, at the very, one of the very opening shots, there's, like, a banner with, like, Hedoras drawn on it. There's, of course, a bunch of the kaiju they bring back. And then there's some other kaiju that aren't called old kaiju names, but are definitely references. Like, Godzilla's first form is definitely a reference to Titanosaurus. That one creature that they have underground is definitely a reference to
Gabara.
There's these spider creatures. They never call them Kumanga, but they're like a cross between Kumanga and Megalon and Hedora, because they spiders, obviously, but their tips of their legs look like the drills that Megalon has, and their face kind of looks like Megalon's face with the mandibles and everything. And then when they get sliced up, they're like blue blood, kind of takes the form of Hedora every once in a while for some reason. So, yeah, I mean, tons of references. I could go on. Like, there's these little robots that the Otaku Factory have that I think are supposed to be a reference to that Nigel robot in the 90s Godzilla TV show from Fox Kids, which is probably still the best Godzilla cartoon, by the way. At one point, Jet Jaguar gets his head ripped off, and I think it's supposed to kind of be a reference to when Mechagodzilla got his head ripped off in Terror of Mechagodzilla. I mean, there's a lot of deep cuts in this show, if you want to look for them, references and Easter eggs and things like that.
Yes.
So I'll give them credit for that. But, you know, the animation is colorful and vibrant, bright and vibrant and colorful enough to keep you visually engaged. And I think they put enough action scenes, one or two an episode, to keep you from getting bored, even though they're spouting a bunch of nonsense and you don't really care about any of the characters. But overall, I think it was probably kind of a missed opportunity because, you know, the best anime, just like the best any kind of fiction or that you read or watch or whatever, are the ones where they give you characters that you care about and you can actually follow the plot.
Easily,
without getting a headache. And this is just not one of those. So,
trust me, you know, your brain will hurt by the end of this show.
Yeah. I will say, I think it's an improvement. It's an improvement over the anime trilogy because even though, I mean, neither one I really care about the characters, but at least in this one, it moves a lot faster and there's just not three long, boring movies. There nothing ever happens. or when it does happen, the fights are like done and like, 1/4 speed.
like that Ghidorah fight
at the end where it's like Godzilla's hands is just like moving in super slow motion and passing through Ghidorah's head.
Ghidorah's head slowly moving
down and lifting. I was like, oh my god, we're gonna be here all day. Yeah, so it's an improvement over that. We'll talk more about the animation. I think mostly in the animation itself is where the improvement is. So there's that, but you know,
not much else.
Not much else.
Jet Jaguar was cool.
Jet Jaguar. I do like Jet Jaguar and how they wove Jet Jaguar. You know, Jet Jaguar needed
a revival.
A rival. He deserved one. Everybody loves Jet Jaguar. Mm-hmm. And he gets a good one in this show. He's a major part of the show. And they do some fun things with Jet Jaguar. And like I said, I do enjoy. The characters make funny quips from time to time.
They're not horrible characters.
They're not like unlikable. They're just kind of bland. I like the AI robot. It's pretty quippy and fun. But yeah, overall, I mean, it's on the surface level, it's fine. But there's not much underneath.
A lot of science mumbo jumbo.
I said a lot of science mumbo jumbo. So there's that. But you want to get into creature design?
Why not?
We got a few to talk about. Let's start with Rodan. Rodan comes into the show first. Rodan is a pretty, kind of what you would, I think they call it a pterosaur, but pretty typical what you would see in a Jurassic Park movie as far as pterodactyls go. It's pretty, with the kind of the Rodan color scheme. There's a few different versions I think they see, but they're all basically the same.
Yeah.
And the classic Rodan, where they bring back all the classic kaiju roars. I'll give them that. Who else? I think Anguirus we see second.
Is it Manda or Anguirus?
There's Mandas. Okay, the Mandas, they're your pretty typical looking, like, I don't know, sea serpent, Chinese dragon kind of thing going on. He actually does not have the old Manda color scheme. They made him, well, I don't know, maybe in Atragon he was more of a bluish color. I don't remember, but there's just a whole school of Manda.
Mm-hmm.
There's Anguirus.
Anguirus
is... basically, looks like Anguirus. He's got, you know, the ankylosaur kind of look, and his spikes on his shell vibrate because they can see the future, and they deflect bullets because they can see him coming before they're shot or whatever.
Yeah.
Who else do we got? We've got
the spiders.
They're spiders, like I said. They're kind of a cross between Akumunga, Megalon, and Hedorah.
The Gabra thing.
Which is on four legs. I mean, it's got the Gabra color scheme. And
I'm not sure what they actually call it.
I forgot what they already called it. Shiburon. Something like that. It's got one big horn, Gabra color scheme, but it's on four legs and, you know, but it looks fine. What other creatures do we got? We've got the little moths. I think they're supposed to be like normal kind of moths, but they've got the Mothra color scheme we see towards the end of the show. We have Jet Jaguar, obviously. Mm-hmm. He looks
like Jet Jaguar.
Pretty much like Jet Jaguar. Now, he looks more like a actual robot, I guess. He's got a bulky torso where they can fit people inside of him and stuff. And a big backpack, that battery or whatever.
He looks like a...
And at some point, he gets like a... At one point in the show, he gets like these tripod like wheels for legs or whatever.
Yeah, and then he can fly. At one point,
they give him like a jetpack and little helicopter shoulder blades to fly, and then he wheels around for most of the show. Like they took off one of Anguirus' spikes and fashioned it into a spear for him to wield around. So yeah, Jet Jaguar is pretty cool.
Do we have anybody else?
Anybody else other than the Big G? I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head. I think that's about it. But let's talk about Godzilla. Mm-hmm. So first we have, like I said, the first form is a aquatic form, kind of like a Nessie kind of creature, but also a reference to Titanosaurus with the color scheme and the fan tail and everything else. And then the second form kind of looks like the Gabra creature and the color scheme and everything.
Yeah.
And then you have Godzilla Ultima, which is your more traditional Godzilla. It kind of has the charcoal gray skin like your traditional Godzilla. Kind of Shin Godzilla-esque. Especially in the way it like opens up its jaws and shoots like a... It's blue instead of pink or purple, but it's like almost a focused laser beam that slices up the buildings and everything.
It has tusks on it.
It has tusks on it. Yeah, but it's pretty neat. It's a pretty unique Godzilla design that keeps, you know, the classic Godzilla look without being too typical. But yeah, I think overall, I appreciate the show for bringing back all these kaiju and, you know, doing them justice. That's one positive I'll point to this show. I will say the animation on the kaiju is mostly the three, like they have, you know, most of the human characters in the background are traditional cel-drawn animation, but the most of the creatures and robots are the CG animation stuff. But I think it looks good. I think they melded together well, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I guess getting into animation, you know, they it's a melding of the two. I think they melded together really well. I think the monsters look good in their 3D animation and they interact well with the 2D drawn elements of the show. But I really appreciate that this is mostly a cel drawn animation show and not all that 3D stuff. And it allows them, I think, to do more because they don't have to spend so much money on computer animators. So, and it, you know, their animation is very bright and vibrant and colorful compared to, you know, those kind of dim and
dark
kind of blandly animated anime trilogy movies or anything like that. And I like it more than the animation of any of the ones that comes the Ultraman show or even a show that I probably liked better overall, but Gamma Rebirth, you know. But the animation's good. I think it's a positive for this show as well. And the score is pretty, works well for the show. There's some original pieces that work fine. Of course, it's all as it always is. It's at its best when it's a Fugabe. They take the march and the theme at one point and add choruses to both of them, which is pretty neat. There's several times where they have like a single cello or whatever playing the Godzilla theme in the background, which is kind of cool. Neat. And then, of course, there's that Indian lullaby song that they have.
They play over and over.
It's a plot device, which is fine. It works. I think it gets better as it gets more epic and grand towards the end with more voices in the chorus and everything.
Louder. It gets louder. Yeah. I swear.
So, I think the score is pretty good too. So, you know, there's a lot of elements working for this show. Just I wish the writing was
a lot better.
A lot less confusing. some more character work would have been nice, but, you know, is what it is. So you want to get into final thoughts?
Why not?
All right. Well, go for it.
Well, you know, this show is, it's better than what you thought it was would be going into it, coming off the anime trilogy.
Yeah.
But it's still not the best. It's below Gamma level.
Yeah.
And, you know, the animation is good. I like the animation better than the 3D animation thing they're trying to bring into a popularity.
Yeah, they're trying to conjure into being popular.
But the character design, it's there. Plot's very jumbled up and hard to understand with all of its scientific things they're throwing around like crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the creature design is pretty cool. I like all the creature designs. They did pretty well on that. Godzilla looks cool in pretty much every stage.
And yeah.
I think I'm going to give this show a B-.
A B-. All right. Yeah, like I've talked about, I There are things I like about the show. Something I didn't mention, I like how they treat Godzilla as like this all-destructive god. That's always best when shows do that. You know, like I said, animation looks really good. I appreciate all the deep cut Easter eggs and the way they brought these old kaiju back to the screen and updated them to give them nice, refreshing looks. Score, I love how they've kind of taken the old Ifukube scores and given them their own little twist and everything and all that. I just wish the writers had done a better job making the plot make sense and, you know, giving me characters to care about and writing a plot that I could follow, because I cannot... I mean, it's hard to follow what's going on and who's doing what and what means what and what's important and what's not and where all these characters are going. And yeah, so I can't give it too high a grade because I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I can't really highly recommend something I don't understand. But, it's not it's painful to watch or anything. It's kind of light and fluffy with the bright and colorful animation and the fun little action sequences they have and stuff. So it goes down pretty easy. Yeah. You're not going to remember it in like T-minus 5 seconds. But yeah, so I'm going to give it a C+. I think a C+ is fair. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so anyway, you know, I want to apologize. We should have rewatched Gamera before we reviewed it last week. That was not professional of us. I want to hold this podcast to higher standards. Mm-hmm. But we did take time to rewatch this, and I'm glad we did, because I would not have remembered a lot of that.
I didn't even remember half the characters.
I didn't either. So there's that, and we will be watching for the first time Skull Island for next week. Before we do get into that, let me get into a quick news segment. Just a box office update on Godzilla Minus One. They're projecting in the second, we're recording this on Sunday night, the second weekend is projected to bring in, I think, around $8.5 million, which is only still third overall at the box office behind the new Studio Ghibli film, The Boy and the Heron, which, if you like Studio Ghibli movies, this is another great one. You should go out and see it. And then The Hunger Games prequel, which is holding on pretty strongly, surprisingly. But again, Godzilla started at the box office like it was last weekend, but only a 27% drop, which is a really good hold. So they're thinking this thing's going to have pretty good legs as long as Toho International keeps putting it out. So I've seen it 4 times now. Andrew's seen it 3 times. Yep. And when we went and saw it again Friday night, of course they have it at the small auditorium at our local AMC, but it was still a pretty packed auditorium. So keep on, if you got the financial means to do it and you enjoy the movie, I say keep on going out there and supporting it. Tell your friends about it. Tell them how great it is. Spread the word. It's a masterpiece. And let's try to keep the success going. But other than that, I want to tell people we got a couple schedule updates. Like I said, Skull Island next week, followed by... I put Shin Ultraman on the schedule for the next week after that, for the week of Christmas. That'll be the 27th, will be that Wednesday. I don't know if I've said this yet. I'm trying to put out episodes before the end of days on Wednesdays. Right now, that's my kind of weekly goal. So that'll be the episode after Christmas will be Shin Ultraman, because I think that's a pretty big deal in the fandom that we, unfortunately, were not around to cover. What was the last Ultraman movie we did? Because we were going through and doing, just me and you, doing the Ultraman movies. It's like a Friday bonus podcast.
Yeah.
I don't remember how far we got. I might, when we get desperate enough for content, I might go back and look that up and see where we were at. But, and I plan to kind of get some more movies figured out. We were doing Tremors before we quit. Like, we had just started the Tremors franchise. We'd done the first movie. And then I think, you know, our random movie after that, but I don't know if we want to go back to doing the Tremors. I don't know if we want to kind of go back to doing our old format where we do a franchise and then a random movie in weeks in between, or if we want to do a more kind of
freestyle.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we can do franchises. I don't know if I want to glue myself to having to constantly be working on a franchise. We'll think about going back to Tremors and seeing if we want to finish up that franchise, or if we want to just go watch a bunch of random movies. We've already watched and reviewed the good Tremors movie. Spoiler alert. But nah, some of the sequels are fine. But Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, it's not like we have that many monster movies that we can... I mean, there's quite a few, but we're still kind of digging in bottom of the barrel here. But we'll figure out, at least we're not... I'm not going to do a plan out a strict schedule like 2 years ahead like I did last time. Yeah. But I just want to be able to have a schedule at least, you know, for 4 or 5 weeks ahead of whatever we're at any given point. So, mm-hmm. And we have, of course, some new things coming out. Like I said, when Blazar concludes, I want to do an episode over Blazar, and there'll be a Blazar movie in February. We'll probably cover the Blazar movie in February. And then, of course, another Godzilla movie, the 38th feature film featuring Godzilla, comes out in April. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. So
That'll be fun.
I also wanted to mention on the podcast that Dylan has tentatively agreed to, he's going to be coming home to visit his folks on Christmas weekend. So he actually asked me if we wanted to do a podcast that weekend while he was here, because he has seen Godzilla Minus One. Let me look up his exact words for the audience here. Let me dig that up. I asked him, he told me he had gone and seen it in IMAX. I asked him what he thought about it, and he said, quote, "Easily one of the best Godzilla movies I've seen, probably top five. It was really good." So, yeah, so maybe we'll get Dylan on the podcast. Maybe we'll have a revisiting Minus One episode 1 week, and that'll be a lot of fun. Get the three of us back together in front of microphones.
Like the good old days.
And maybe we can get him down. I don't know if we'll get him down for the weekend release, but the next time he's down after the release of Godzilla X Kong, I'm sure he'll be willing to talk about that movie, because he'll probably go see it even by himself if he's not down here that weekend. So, yeah, we got fun things coming up. What else did I want to talk about? Website launch. I have created us a new website. Very basic. Very simple. I needed the free version, so it's www.stompthisway.wordpress.com, because I didn't want to pay $12 a year to take out the WordPress part.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, but it has the homepage shows you the most recent episodes. Mm-hmm. You can go on the scheduled page, and it'll show you what projects we got coming up over the next few weeks, and then... there's also an About Us page that just gives you a brief description of basically the podcast and explains to new listeners that Dylan is no longer a full-time host because he lives... I didn't say this specifically, but he moved to OKC, so which is too far away for him to come and do the show weekly. So, yeah.
Yes.
So... anyway, go check that out if you want to. I'm going to continue to work on it. I'm limited to what I can do on the free version of WordPress, but I'll try to make it look a little better as time goes on. I get time to work on it. And I did want to remind, I keep trying to remember to remind the listeners about this, especially new listeners to the podcast. If you just are now, if you caught on the Minus One episode and you're just coming back, the episodes in Spotify, I explained this in our revival episode. We lost a few in the transition from Podbean to Spotify as a host. And so the ones labeled From the Vault are actually our first 26 episodes. So if you're like me and you have to listen to a podcast starting with episode one and then go all the way to the catch up to the whatever is being released now, start with the introduction episode that in parentheses says From the Vault, and then work your way through the From the Vault episodes, and then scroll down to the bottom and start with I think the Godzilla vs. Gigan episode is the first one that successfully got transferred. So anyway, just wanted to put that reminder out there. But other than that, I think that's it. So I'm going to start doing our more traditional ending and reminding you that you can contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. Andrew, remind them of that website address.
stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right. And like I said, over there, you can find a brief schedule of just the few upcoming weeks, an About Us page, and our latest episodes, and a link to the Spotify
podcast.
But looking at the statistics, it looks like a vast majority of you listen on Apple Music or whatever the hell it's called. So
a lot of people have iPhones.
I know, all you iPhone users out there. I am a dedicated Android user, but
I appreciate you listening.
I still appreciate you listening. But anyway, that is all we got for you for this week. Join us next week for Skull Island, and we'll see you next time.